The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, Zurich Australia Limited, ABN 92000010195, AFSL 232510, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Welcome to the Life Insurance Podcast for Ensemble. I'm your host, Ben Donald, Managing Director of Life Advice Partners and currently completing a doctorate in life insurance. My goal is simple, improving life insurance outcomes for Australians. This podcast series is all about bringing life insurance back onto the radar for advisors across the country. Each episode features real conversations with the people who live and breathe this work every day, uncovering the lessons, processes, and the stories that help advisors lift confidence, capability, and client outcomes. Whether you write two policies a year or 200, this podcast is here to help you deliver better protection, build stronger businesses, and ultimately serve more Australians. Let's jump in.
Zurich is proud to be supporting this episode. Experience Zurich and OnePath advisor portals with new and improved digital capabilities and an enhanced range of self-service functionality, helping make your business more efficient, saving you time and removing complexity. It's everything you need in one place. Partner with us today.
Today, I'm absolutely delighted and a little bit intimidated to have probably one of the most famous financial advisors in Australia. And certainly, ladies and gentlemen, the statesman for life insurance advice in Australia, Mr. Sam Pereira. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I agreed to come on here because I didn't think you'd be roasting me like you did at the cricket a couple of days ago, but you've already started that. So I don't know what I've agreed to, but delighted to be here with you, mate. And yeah, very happy to have this conversation because I know how passionate you are. And I think the audience should probably know that Ben's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes, especially over the last year and a half. He's ramped things up to try and get a peer group together that speaks for the healthy and vibrant sustainability of the life insurance market. So you've shown incredible leadership. Not many people would know, plenty of organisation and trying to get people together to have the right conversations to move the sector in the right direction. So, yeah, thank you for your leadership and your efforts as well.
I feel like you've just roasted me. But thanks, mate. Right, so we're gonna dive down into your practice, what's made that successful, what the industry looks like. I wanna lean a lot on your experience at the FAAA because obviously, like I said, mate, you are the leading statesman. So, as a little bit of pre-research to this, I did a bit of a deep dive into your business, mate. And there's a couple of quick questions that come up, right? So you've been working with what look like two standout ladies, Janelle and Margie.
Yes. Close to 15 years.
Mate, so there's two questions that come out of that.
Oh, dear.
Is one, what are you doing to keep staff so happy and to build such a lovely team? And two, what are you doing with your facial hair? Because going back and looking at these photos, mate, it was the mustache for a while, it was the big beard, now it's gone the short.
So. Well, what does it say about my personality that I can't stand, sit still, you know? But look, very lucky, and I think many of my peers in the country that run fantastic businesses would agree, and you've been a leader of big teams over the years. People are our most valuable asset, certainly from a business perspective, and very grateful. They add stability, to our business, that additional service that they go over and beyond. That's an incredibly vitally important part of our business and our clients, and because we service the professional market as well. So Janelle and Margie have been with me close to 15 years, and we're very much, it sounds cliche, but very much a family, and closely followed by Kristen, who's been there nearly 10 years and others. So one of the great successes of our business. Equally, when I was lucky enough to be leading the AFA, an incredible team of people shoulder to shoulder to help drive the agenda and drive forward our outcomes. I just happen to be the spokesperson currently in my business as well.
Yeah, mate. So for Janelle and Margie, I guess commiserations, but congratulations to you, mate, for having such a well-rounded team. It's wonderful to see that stability, especially in the industry that's obviously gone through its ups and downs. Mate, can I ask though, just again, going back a step, it's really important, I think, for a lot of people to understand
What got you into advice, how you got into it, why you've become a risk specialist? What does that journey look like? When did you first start?
Yeah, look, 20 years ago, we had a bit of a celebration for our 20th anniversary in October this year.
Yeah, I got the invite. Oh. Thanks.
Sorry, as I said, we couldn't invite everybody. But look, it was also important just to, I don't think we as a collective, perhaps even as a human race, take a pause every now and again to give thanks and gratitude for the incredible people in our life, the milestones, our successes, etc. So we paused and we had a bit of a celebration. But 20 years ago, I was fortunate enough to come into the industry. But I might step it back a bit. A profession. One way of describing a profession vis-a-vis lawyers and accountants and doctors is a cohort of human beings that are the keepers of specialist knowledge, typically in complex areas. Therefore, the ordinary punter doesn't have that knowledge. They pay that professional for that knowledge, for the transmission of knowledge. So the same. So that's true, as I said, for doctors, lawyers, accountants. What's somewhat different to financial advisors, so they've got that aspect as well. We're dealing in complex areas, insurance, superannuation, retirement planning, aged care, et cetera, of course, made perhaps easier now with the advent of AI for an ordinary punter to look up some of the answers to some of those trickier questions. But what's unique to financial advice, which is different to perhaps some of those other professions that I've spoken about, is that specialist knowledge that we have in relation to people. A lot of our work is also that people coaching aspect of it. You know, Russell Collins says our business is 95% people knowledge and 5% technical knowledge, but you better know 100% of the 5%.
Yep.
So it was a very attractive profession for me to get into. I was training to be an accountant, but I felt as though I had, you know, a bit more to offer from a personality perspective, and it would have enabled me to, don't laugh, to exercise my faculties in that regard, in that behavioral relationship aspect of dealing with human beings. And, you know, of course, in insurance, getting people to see the risks that may not necessarily be apparent and take some corrective action in relation to that. But if you're a financial planner, you know, making sure your clients aren't making decisions that are going to erode their wealth as a starting position. So that takes that behavioral finance aspect of it, which I think is a very unique and special privilege and something that sets us apart from other professions as well. So that's what attracted me and kept me into the and kept me in the profession some 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I guess that's sort of summed up with certainty, clarity and confidence.
You have done your research very well. Also very cliche-ish, but if you ask me now, you know, what are we trying to be? And, you know, if you were to tag us in any way, there are many good friends of ours across the sector. I think at Pereira Crowther, we'd like to try and be one of the safest pair of sets of hands that you can choose if you were looking to insure yourself and your business and your family and your assets against life's misfortunes. So perhaps a little bit of certainty and confidence coming up there as well.
If we could just have a link to Sam's website, please, that'd be great.
Had a meeting recently with a BDM that focused on education rather than sales. Grab the transcript of the meeting, log into cpdcheck.com and earn valid CPD points.
It's so been in the business for 20 years, right?
Yes.
What's changed? So like you're obviously very, very passionate about it, but can I just ask so you wanted to get into it for the people component, right?
Yes.
Specializing on that 5%. You've got the same team members, but how has the business changed? What does it look like at the moment?
Yeah, I think we're a lot more sophisticated than we were 20 years ago. It's a larger team. We've got the scale that's necessary to run a solid risk business in the country. And look, when we first started, we had no clients. Many people have heard me heard that story before. So now we've got a large body of clients that we look after, referral partners, et cetera. So we've got a fair bit of work. We've got great infrastructure, not only the human infrastructure, you know, the tech could always be improved. Come on, life bit, hurry up, Brett, Brett Wright.
Yep.
But certainly a lot more sophisticated, mature, business. So I think that's just a natural evolution.
Specifically, right? So if you think about new advisors potentially coming into the profession, you said that you started with zero clients, which is, I imagine, a terrifying place to be at the time. You're now a relatively decent sized business. You're based out of the Shire still, are you?
No, we closed our Currumbar office down.
Okay.
But we're based in the CBD, but we've got clients all over the eastern seaboard, as well as an increasing presence in Perth. So we're nation wide, and largely because of some group insurance work we do for some large businesses across the country.
Okay. So if you go a suburban based business, right? And I'm rewinding a couple of years.
Yeah.
Suburban based business, you specialize with doctors, lawyers, academia, that sort of thing.
Yes.
And again, the lessons that you've learned, what are some of those lessons that you think you'd be able to impart onto some of those advisors that are thinking about getting into risk? And then follow-up question, what are some of the mistakes that you made?
Yeah, okay. The first one is, I think, finding a mentor in any stage of business, in any discipline within the profession. So someone that's, kicking goals that are bigger than yours, that you can bounce things off, aspire to, or a community perhaps within maybe a licensee group, a peer group, etc. So I think I was very fortunate very early on in the piece through MDRT, Russell Collins, a dear friend of mine and a great mentor, a legend of the industry, but surrounding myself with people that were miles ahead of me in business and in life that were willing to share. And it also gave me something to aspire to, right? Not that I was consciously thinking that I wanted to outdo anybody, but it certainly drives you as well. So if you can take anything else away from what's contributed to, the success that we've had over the 20 years, I think finding a mentor and or a peer group that pushes you and continues to push you, I think that's probably the biggest takeaway I could,
Yeah, mate, I have to agree. I started doing that a little bit more seriously about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes.
Now I've surrounded myself with people, like you said, that are kicking far bigger goals than myself.
Yes.
And, for anybody listening, that's probably the first big moment that I want to take out of our conversation, is that find some mentors. Have you taken that role on? Because now you're one of those guys that is kicking goals, right? You are the elder statesman.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Older, but you're but a statesman. It's Have you thought about taking on?
Look, I was lucky enough as a result of my work with AFA and continuous work for the sector that I've made friends all around the country, and I constantly keep in touch with people. Often not. I love those coffees where I'm talking one-on-one with people about their business, what they're doing, what I'm thinking about doing. So while it's not in a structured way, I probably don't have the capacity to do that, but certainly very informally. And my door, my phone, my email is always open to anyone that's got any ideas that can help me or have any questions in terms of helping themselves. I see myself very much as a businessman first, as an advisor second, and that was also a unique mindset I bought into the business 20 years ago. So wanted to help people, exercise my faculties in relation to relationships, but I also saw the incredible business opportunity when I worked for the fellow that brought me into the business, Tony Mason Cox, 20 years ago, that he was building an incredible business, an incredible lifestyle, and doing some very important and noble work for his clients at the same time. So very much a businessman as well.
Yep. Okay. Mate, shifting gears a little bit then, your work as, as Mr. Life Insurance in Australia, president of the AFA for how long?
I was only there for, I did myself out of a job maybe for 2.5 years or something.
Yeah, I think
like
the
that.
Writing was on the wall as soon as you joined. Mate, so can I say on behalf of a lot of advisors, thank you for your work in bringing those two associations together, because having one instead of two is obviously brilliant, right? And the closer we get to one governing association across the whole industry, I think that the better we'll be.
Absolutely, Ben, and no problem at all. It was for the benefit of the industry. And again, it was the businessman in me. When I joined the executive of the AFA, I could just see that if we were to achieve the goals that we wanted to achieve, and against the backdrop of a sector and a profession that was somewhat shrinking, it made no commercial sense to continue to operate as two different bodies. We would be far more potent as one. So you kind of got to leave your emotions, to a site. Very difficult when you've got a business that's been going for 75 years old, and you know, a lot of feeling and emotion involved. But you know, you kind of got to do what's best for achieving your overall objectives. And I was pleased that we had a team that was able to see that and execute that. So a very special part of my career, and made some lifelong friends as a result of it.
Mate, thank you. No, so genuinely, mate, that really appreciative. On that component, right, that has meant that you've been a lot closer to government changes, policy changes, all those sorts of things, and you've sort of been in the driving seat when it's come to a lot of this thing, or maybe in the passenger seat, but you've been in the car. Yeah. You've had a front row seat.
I can't say that our efficacy's been great, but not for a lack of trying.
Yeah, no, mate. So, again, I don't want to harp on the past, because we all know the problems that we've faced. But what do you think the next sort of 5 to 10 years looks like for life insurance in particular?
Oh, yeah. Look, it's a really good one. I think certainly for us that are within the sector, we're very A Tale of Two Cities, right? Charles Dickens, best of the times and the worst of times. Mm. The best of times are not enough advisors doing or writing life insurance, advising their clients in life insurance. Heaps of Australians underinsured, and the wealth of Australians growing. Now, I know the economy's got challenges, notwithstanding Australia continues to be a very prosperous country, and certainly the clients that I aspire to serve are becoming wealthier by the day. So you've got an affluent society growing in wealth, and underinsured society, and less advisors doing the work. So on all of those counts, my friend Chris Mason from MBS, who you also know really well, Chris, and say shooting fish in a barrel. There are so many opportunities, notwithstanding the market, as you will know, which is why you've shown that great leadership in trying to make some instigate some meaningful change, has its challenges. The market's been shrinking. Whilst we are seeing some green shoots, it's not growing anywhere near enough. Of course, it's an aging pool, and as the aging pool lapses, we need younger lives in there coming in to offset the shrinking pool, mental health being a significant challenge as well. So you've got these two competing forces. I think ultimately we are in a good place, and we will be heading towards positive territory. But I think there has to be some intervention in relation to product and distribution to get more financial advisors, more risk specialists, writing insurance, getting more younger lives into the insurance pool. And that will require some courage, some bold action, and some vigour in terms of trying to get the momentum for that change as well. So blokes like you're in charge of that sort of stuff now. So, yeah.
Trying really hard. You touched on it before, the word mental health. It's very much a sore point with insurers, with society. Like, it's a very provocative word. It's one of the challenges that a lot of advisors are coming to me with personally, saying, hey, how do I approach this? Because ultimately the insurers are basically putting a blanket exclusion, or they just don't want anything to do with that sort of thing. What are you seeing from an advisor's perspective with clients and mental health?
Yeah, I think your sort of account is fairly close to the money. In years gone by, it was fairly not easy, but at least you had a window to try and argue the toss.
Yeah,
but certainly underwriters are far more far less willing to look at any forms of mental health, even if it was an episodic. And that's something that took place maybe 4 or 5 years ago. They are very cautious. As we know, reinsurers have their views about mental health and the current construct of products, and how they're not tight enough perhaps to address the mental health challenges that Australia as a society faces. So until we get a product construct that better deals with mental health claims, specifically in the TPD space, I think Taylor's made some good inroads as a result of their product release at the last in December.
Yep.
I'm not paid by Taylor. This is not cash comments. I'm not lawyers here. You're not allergic.
I'm happy to be, though. So,
But I think until we get more products in the market of that sort of that akin to that Taylor's product, we will continue to see a very risk averse underwriters as when it comes to mental health, rightfully so, in my view.
Mm.
Yeah.
So if you're an advisor and you're faced with a client who's got a bit of mental health, what would sort of your advice be to those advisors that haven't necessarily had a massive exposure to it?
Yes.
What does it look like for them going forward, do you think?
Yeah. Look, I think the first thing is to for any advisor is to try and any risk specialist, rather, is to position the loading. Russell Collins taught me years ago once, you've met with a client and you've completed the application form, say to them, this is going to go one of three ways. You're going to get accepted, declined, or there may be a loading or an exclusion put on as a result of some of the disclosures. So when an exclusion or a loading comes in, the client's not surprised, and it's a lot easier to have that conversation. We take that one step further, and we let our clients know that, look, mental health is having a significant impact in the life insurance market. One in every two, perhaps even three, one in every three, perhaps even every two applications, there's some mental health disclosures, and the insurers are risk averse, and they typically put an exclusion in, which basically means you can't claim for mental health. So we're disarming the client, if you like, against any disappointment they might have further down the track or any expectation that they ought to be covered. So we have that conversation up front.
Yep.
So it's not a sting when the underwriting decision comes through.
Where are you having that conversation with a client? So prior to the SOA engagement or prior to the fact find, whereabouts?
Yeah, look, we're all different. My style is when I initially meet the client, and it's somewhat of a, you know, in the old terminology, a fact finding mission. I've learned a little bit about themselves, their work and their financial position. I'm asking about their health, and I'll using my own lingo and whatever, I'll ask them about, you know, have there been any mental health concerns, any, you know, counselling, treatment, etc. So I'll have that conversation up front, and often not in that first meeting.
Yeah, and you find, so that's disarming clients. Has it been more of a kickback from clients at all in the last sort of 5 years or not?
No, I think painting the picture, explaining to them the impact that mental health, the challenges the insurers are facing as a result of that, up front, is providing the context for them to understand that. And I think that's where the skill of a good advisor comes in, to say, well, hey, they're not just picking on you. It's because of all this other stuff going on. Look, I once had a partner at a law firm, and he got quite irate. And, of course, you can't help that because the client's personalizing that. But, again, it's, you know, our people skills to be able to empathize and provide the context and explain the situation to them.
Okay. Right, so again, just on the process for you, right? So you've got a way that you talk to the clients about mental health. I'm going to guess you've got a set of documentation that you use. You've got a set process of how you engage with the client. Again, just so everybody can understand how, you know, how the bee's knees does it.
Let's, ladies and gentlemen, it is Mr. Sam Pereira.
Oh, sure. Goodness me.
Mate, what does your process look like?
Yeah.
How do you start?
There would be far more efficient people, I'm sure, in terms of their process. But I'm kind of like you. I love people, and my initial meeting is not at all structured. I want to know why they came and saw me, and what they, you know, I want to understand a little bit about their finances, and the bulk of the time is spent really conceptualizing, Ben, if you died yesterday, what does that mean for Beck? You know, can she continue to work in her role? What does it mean for the kids? So it's more that sort of collaborative conversation. Again, no structured questions, no structured fact find per se. It's almost Picasso style, mate.
You get
the pen out of passion, and you get a bit of an understanding of the financial position. So I think the value, and I think which is something you wanted to touch, what's the value in an advisor as opposed to a client going and buying insurance, you know, from a website,
et cetera.
It's that coaching them in relation to the what ifs, and, you know, truly just conceptualizing, as opposed to me suggesting what they should be doing. It's more of a conversation. So that initial meeting is really just walking away with financial position, a bit of a concept around the risk strategy, what their priorities might be, and a high level understanding as to their health. So again, a two-page pre-assessment questionnaire will follow, but prior to that, I want to understand if they've been hospitalized, are they under the care of any specialists, et cetera, which comes with skill.
Yeah, I'm finding this really challenging, right? So for a long time, that's the way that I've approached advice.
Yeah.
And I'm getting advice from people around me saying it's not scalable. You know, you need that system, that process. These are the 15 questions you ask. And I'm still struggling very much with that, but I can very much see the advantage of the way that you do it. And it feels almost old school, and it's the way that I love doing advice as well.
Yeah, I think everything's old is new again. So
enough, yeah.
Equally, I have, like you, being in the business for 20 years, you've got friends that are underwriters and insurers and whatever, and insurance companies are sick and tired of advice firms that are pre-assessing almost every single client of them with multiple insurers.
Yep.
You may not know it, but you get yourselves a bad name and the underwriters aren't going to do any favors. So whilst I see the benefit of a structured process and that questionnaire is vitally important, et cetera, there are ways to going about extracting information that will help get a better outcome for your clients and expedite the process without necessarily,
underwriting eczema for a life insurance.
Exactly right. So yeah. there's a balance, give and take.
And so are you working more with financial advisors? So the general practitioners, or what does it look like from your end?
We've got some financial advisors that are referring clients to us as well, because they risk is too hard, too complex. So we've had some great success with a couple of joint ventures as well, and we've undertaken some acquisitions for people that have decided that they want to retire. Look, I, like you, I would like to see every financial advisor in the country at least have an attempt of writing some insurance, talking to their clients about, call it a policy a month, if you like, and it doesn't have to be a big policy, and it's not as scary as you think. The fact-finding component, you've already got there. If you're giving them financial advice, you understand what their financial position is. And and I would assume that you understand intimately, you know, their thoughts around risk and et cetera. So you're not changing anything. You're not adding anything new. Then it's a case of finding an insurance solution. The BDMs can help with training. There are risk specialists that would be more than willing. That's a great thing about our profession, people are willing to give their time to help you structure and create a bit of a strategy. And then the underwriting part, I mean, it can be made efficient, right? You don't have to sit there with a client for an hour and complete an application form. You could send them to telehealth. You could, in our business, we use the online links a lot from the insurance companies that do have online links, so the clients can complete their application forms at their own time. So there are steps that you can take as a financial advisor if you don't want to spend too much time on the insurance process, but at the same time, recognize that, you know, your clients need to be protected, or at least you should be having that conversation with them. You can get into it, and some insurance is better than no insurance, in my view. You're not going to be a subject matter overnight, you know, but having some insurance, having a go is I would commend you to do that.
Yeah, the education that I'd received was that financial planning is a house and life insurance is the slab.
Yes.
So, you know, it all falls over unless that's done properly at the bottom there.
Absolutely.
First thing you should be doing is addressing insurance.
Yeah, and look, it's not for accumulators, and you would, and in your previous life and in your current life as well, we've got clients that are extremely wealthy, that are in their 60s and 70s, that hold large life insurance policies for liquidity purposes, for key man purposes. So there would be opportunities such as that, even if you don't want to get into retail insurance, perhaps thinking about some group opportunities that you might have within your client base for as a way of getting more Australians insured. Bottom line is, me and Ben want you to get involved. We want to see $500 million worth of retail new business written in the next 18 months, selfishly, because that will help our existing clients, existing pool, and get more Australians insured. So that's the preaching part.
As you were talking, I was thinking about your facial hair, and I just saw the Abe Lincoln beard coming out saying, we want you to write life insurance.
I don't know if that's a compliment or...
Right, so so you think it's possible then? So life insurance, has gone through a tough time.
Yes.
It really has. There's no denying it. I think every article that we're seeing at the moment is talking about the green shoots, that we've basically hit the bottom and we're on the way back up there. So if you are an advisor, start thinking about it again.
Absolutely.
You know, as Sam said, he's always happy to help out. So if you're not looking to do it yourself, obviously reach out to a risk specialist and partner up with them.
And there are plenty in the country that'd be more than willing and happy to. And it may not necessarily be retail. It could be group, could be general, could be wholesale. Of course, there's going to be complexities if you're giving personal advice in financial planning. How do you then treat the client generally? Yeah. But there are plenty of avenues. But bottom line is we just need to see to people, to our peers, to help out and pick up the tools.
Now, at the risk of you staying on the soap box. Sorry, just try and get you back off it again for a second, mate. You've been extremely passionate about life insurance for, I think, longer than I've been alive. Mate, why is that? Is there a turning point? Is there an inflection point? Is there something that happened?
Yeah.
Because from where I'm sitting, and I think from where a lot of financial advisors, looking at somebody like you, extremely capable, really beautiful business, and you've spent so much time giving back to industry.
Yeah.
Why?
Goodness me. When you're helping someone with a claim, and just before Christmas, we found out that one of our clients had a stroke whilst they were on holiday in the Philippines. Thankfully, they were okay. They were flown back to Sydney. Going to the hospital, I did not have to drive up to the Central Coast, but I insisted that I go up there just so he knew that we were going to be there for him. It is a feeling that you can't describe. It is, you know, it's somewhat of a miracle, and the rusted on life is, we'll say that you're creating millions of dollars, you know, with the stroke of a pen for a potential client. So it's extremely rewarding, that aspect of it, coaching a client. They're, you know, going through a mental health challenge and they're on claim for that, and you're helping alleviate their problems and giving them the trick that enables them to service their mortgage. A cancer sufferer that can choose to go and have the double mastectomy even though their doctor doesn't want them to do that, and choose their own surgeon in a private hospital because they've got a critical illness payout. It you really can't describe that. I think it's very noble, the work that our particular sector does within the profession, and that's extremely gratifying, but not entirely altruistic. You know, I've made a fabulous living for myself and my family as a result of building a business the right way over the course of the last 2 decades, and I think that'll continue as well. And, of course, it makes it all the more easier if you're surrounded by a fabulous team and, you know, you love the clients that you work with. So, mate, it doesn't – I've got a renewed lease on life. I was a bit burnt out after the AFA and the merger, et cetera, but
yeah.
Back in the chair, I've got a renewed lease in life, and yeah, we're smashing it, and we'll continue to
that's awesome.
Smash it. And I think it's because of the important work we do, but we're paid well to do that as well. And we shouldn't be ashamed of it, and we shouldn't be shy of it. So that's another reward. If you get involved in life insurance, you're not just doing it for the good of your clients. That's a terrific, and that should be the driver. But you can be paid quite handsomely as well if you're working in the right segments of the market.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a really good point, because I think Sue Viskovich did, I don't know how many businesses she interviewed, but they showed quite clearly that those practices that had life insurance as part of their business were obviously were a fair bit more profitable and successful, and had a higher valuation model.
Oh, absolutely. I think the margins, I would hazard a guess to say that the margins that would typically be higher because of the revenue model. I will say that in this market, because it's a hard market in using general insurance terms, that we're working our asses off.
It's off.
It's a technical term. But certainly we're, you know, financial planning, if you like, that you've got to meet on a yearly basis, or get the FDS signed and whatever not, which necessitates a exchange of services or a exchange of value. Yeah, exactly right. But life insurance is cross-subsidized, commission model, et cetera. So very, very attractive. And if you're a financial planner, having an additional revenue stream, perhaps such as mortgages or accounting or whatever, just helps bolster the value of your business overall.
Yep.
And ultimately, we should all be thinking of ourselves as businessmen or women as part of being an advisor.
I completely agree, mate. So I guess just rounding it out. All right. Now, I feel like there's a couple of points that we could take away for this next question, mate. But if you've got 30 financial advisors in front of you that sort of do a little bit, maybe do 3-4 policies a year, and the goal is to get them to do 10-12 a year at the very least, what's one or two bits of advice that you'd like to pass on to them?
Yeah, I would just say, look, when you're in your next review, or perhaps you presumably you've got a list of reviews that you're going to do in January or February, just yourself, you just take stock and for a minute think, if this client died yesterday or got hit by a bus yesterday and was maimed, what would be their financial position like? And perhaps they're a retiree, and if that happened, what would it mean for their children if they had to care for their parents, etc.? So I think the first step is, as a financial planner or an engineer of your client's financial affairs, you start to realise the inherent risk that there might be there that you may not have addressed. I think that's the first thing.
Yep.
And then start to slowly ask the question, if you like, and then it becomes more and more easier. But set yourself a goal. If every advisor in the country can, you know, look at introducing one additional client to the pool a month, say 12, so go from 4 to 12, set yourself a goal. New year, you know, like, you know, go to the gym, whatever it is, set yourself a goal and off you go. I mean, I would love with your help to set these targets, but it'd probably be frowned on by the regulator or something like that, saying you're just trying to sell insurance to get commissions. Of course we're not. But set yourself a goal. But more importantly, I think as a financial engineer, step back and consider and contemplate what might go wrong if the worst happened yesterday, and that might spur you on to take some action.
There's a financial advisor that I'm doing a bit of work with at the moment called Simon Wu.
Right.
And he's got older retiree clients, and he's basically saying the largest risk to their financial plan is their adult children not being able to look after themselves. Because ultimately, if you've got a client in that situation, your client's not going to make a financial decision. They'll make an emotional one.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, it can...
Yeah.
Great. Preaching to the converted.
Yeah, that is. It's all right. And then green shoots. So what's happening next in life insurance in Australia, right? So you sit on, I don't know, how many joint policy committee frameworks.
I've wound all of that back. I'm sitting on my own throne and my own business and looking after my clients. But now look at like
your ear, don't deny it. Your ear must be close to the ground, right? I'm not going to let you get away without answering.
No, look, with yourself, we're doing some great work, Christine Cupid at Cali. So we've established a working group with Cali, as you know, jointly with some advisors and some leading licensees around the country to have a dialogue going to help move the market onto a firm footing, and perhaps looking at, you know, tackling challenges such as mental health and distribution to try and so that's one aspect of it. I do not think the government will act in any way to increase remuneration.
Is 80-20 off the cards?
I would suggest it's going to be very challenging to prosecute that argument. I it was a grave mistake 10 years ago, and the health of the market is to a large part driven by, you know, those shenanigans of LIF. So I think 80-20 would have been a great spot. It would have, I think most of the insurers would have happily paid 80-20, would have enabled general financial advisors to sell insurance and, you know, meet their costs of servicing.
Yep.
Can I see it getting to 80-20 in the next 3 to 5 years? Highly unlikely, not through because I wouldn't want that to happen. I just think it's very difficult.
Yeah,
with a Labor government run by the left Labor caucus, and you know, a minister on the right, a treasurer on the right side, then it's going to have challenges, and the government's got bigger issues on their agenda. So.
Yeah.
We can't wait for them.
Yep.
So we've got to fix the TPD issue and look for other ways.
Look, sorry to cut you off, but that's actually really positive, I would have thought, to a certain extent. So the insurers are starting to move on it, right? You've got Zurich that came out first, I think, then Ascender's moved. Now TAL's come out with a new TPD product. And I think you would anticipate, in the next 12 months, every single insurer will have made some progress towards fixing that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, look, kind of like
maybe
baby steps, but I think it's encouraging. I think TAL's offer was a, you know, a firm stake in the ground, and like anything, you know, people start to copy. So I think that'll definitely help, and the others will soon follow as well. And Swiss Re's letter was a fairly strong letter. There are a couple of other insurers that have some challenges and they need to work out what they're going to do, but that's their business, not ours. So I think And look, general advice done properly, I am a fan of. But done properly is probably the word I'd like to disclaimer. Yeah. If you like, and perhaps, you know, more advisors getting into group and wholesale opportunities as well. But no, I don't have my Nostradamus sort of crystal ball. I'm afraid, but plenty of opportunities to serve plenty of Australians to get in short.
Yeah, mate. All right. Well, mate, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
No problem at all.
Mate, all right.
Cheers, Benny.
Catch you, mate. See
ya. Okay, bye.